Okay, so we are at March 6, 2017. We are the week of Purim. It's the 10th of Adar. Sam? 10, 9?
That's 8.
Okay, someplace.
The 8th.
Or the 8th. Someplace in that range in terms of the month of Adar. We are in the beginning of Perek Chav Gimel. And in the beginning of Perek Chav Gimel, just point there is a couple of psukim here all having to do with telling the truth. That the very beginning opens up with that mitzvah. Well, Tisa Shem Hashav Al Teshes Yadcha Im Rasha Liyosein Hamas. Do not accept false reports. Do not extend your hand to the wicked. Be with him, etc. Okay, that's the first thing. And then a little bit later on, it says, Lo Satem Yishvad Minach Midvar Shekir Tirchak V'Nachi V'Tzadik Al Tarug. That you have to stay far away from falsehood. So there is a interesting Gemara that appears in Maseches Sanhedrin. Maseches Sanhedrin on Daf, and the words we have a couple of essays I'm linking together from the Kiddushi Aleph from Rav Henoch Leibowitz, who is Rosh Hashiva Yeshiva's Chafetz Chaim. So he points out the following thing in the Gemara Sanhedrin Daf Chaf Tesamarav. The Gemara asks, the Gemara there is Parak Vizem Borer, the ideas of assigning witnesses in the laws of Sanhedrin, and the Gemara asks, how do you make sure a guy tells the truth? How do you know? Alright, how do we intimidate? The Mishnah tells us that we intimidate the witnesses in order to make sure they tell the truth. So Gemara wants to know, what do we tell them in order to intimidate them? So Amar Rav Yehuda, this is again Chaf Tes Amud Aleph in Sanhedrin, Amar Le Rav Yehuda, Hachi Aminalu, this is what we tell to them. Nisim Veruach Vegeshem Ayin, Ish Misaleel B'Matas Shaker. So clouds and wind, but no rain, when a man takes pride in a dishonest gift. What does that mean? That you're going to not have rain, that you're going to suffer. If you lie, you're not going to get rain, and that's going to be a problem. So Amar Le Rava, well, that would be a good warning for the guy. But Yachli Lemir, he could just say, Shav Shani Hava Kafnan. So what if there's a 7-year famine? The Ababa Umana Lo Khalif. It's not going to enter the craftsman's door. What does that mean? I mean, I happen not to farm for a living. I'm a basketball player, and people are always going to tune in to NBA games. My contract, I have a guaranteed contract. I don't have to worry about the problems of there being a famine. I'll be okay, so I can go ahead and lie. Okay? So El Amar Rava. So Rava went after Rav Yehuda for his pasuk. So Rava suggests his own pasuk. I'm reading the Hu, we tell him the following verse. Mefitz v'chera v'chit shanun, isho nebereyu e shakira. A club, a sword, and a sharp arrow. When a man bears false witness against his fellow. Meaning, what's going to happen to you? You're going to get clubbed, sworded, or arrowed. Right? Something bad is going to happen to you. So Amar Le Ravashi, yeah, but Yachil Amir, he could say, Shav Shnei Havamusana, there may be a 7-year plague. Ve'inish Belo Shnei Alo Shachiv, but a person is not going to die prematurely. That is itself an interesting question, which we spoke about earlier, that could a person die prematurely when it's not yet his time? It's not always his time. Remember, we talked about that in terms of Bechira Chavshis, the end of Shmos, or... But there were some Ramban about that. Yeah, Bruce got all upset about that. Anyways, so but that's his claim. He's going to take solace in the idea that my time is going to, whatever my time is, my time. And you're telling me that there's going to be some kind of attack. Yeah, but the attack's not going to come to me if it's not my time to die anyways. So therefore, it's not going to impact him. So Ella Amar Rav Ashi. So rather, Rav Ashi says, this is the pasuk we tell him. Amar Li Nasan Bar Mar Zutra. He told me that. Armin and Lu, we tell him, Sade Shakrio Graihu Zile. Perjurious witnesses are contemptible even in the eyes of those who hire them. How do we know that? Tichsiv v'hushivu shnayim anashim b'nei b'lial negdo b'yudu le'mor b'irachta elukim v'melech. And let them place 2 corrupt men opposite him, and they'll testify him saying, you've cursed God and you're the king. What in the world is that talking? That's a pasuk in Malachim. Chaf Aleph, Perek Chaf Aleph, the story of Navos. Anybody here familiar with the story of Navos? Navos had this field. The king, Queen Izebel and King Ahav, they were both after this guy's field. This guy didn't want to give up his field, didn't want to sell his field. And ultimately, they concocted some plan against him. They made it so that he was worried about Malchus. This is the pasuk describing them. Let's take two corrupt men and we'll go against him. And we'll say, you curse the God and the king, and therefore you're going to be chayav misa. If a person is killed for cursing the king, guess what? Not only is he killed, but his property is actually taken by the king. And that's an easy way for King Ahav and Queen Yezebel in order to gain his king. So we're going to concoct these false witnesses and go after this guy, frame him for subversion of the king. He's going to be killed. The king is going to get his property, and that way the king will be able to get his Nabos's land. What's going to happen to Nabos? Nabos will be killed. What happened, by the way? Anybody? The Gemara actually asks, what did Nabos do to deserve such a terrible fate? You know? Have you heard the story before? Well, yeah.
I can't recall what the case against him was.
It's talked about, yes. Yeah. The Gemara says Nabos had a beautiful voice. He was one of the singers of the Beis HaMikdash, and he would take a day off every once in a while. Say, I don't feel like singing today. The Gemara says that's why, because people might come and they want to hear from his singing, they want to hear his beautiful voice, and he's denying them the inspiration of his beautiful voice. There is a story of Joe DiMaggio, and apparently Joe DiMaggio always jumped out of the dugout in order to run to center field. He'd run as fast as he can to get to center field. He played center field, right? Right? And they once asked him, you know, Joe, come on, you know, so many years you've been in the league, and every time you run out, you know, you take it easy a little bit. You're older, you're a veteran already. So Joe DiMaggio said, no, because there may be that one kid in the stands who's there saying, I want to see Joe DiMaggio play. I got to show them the way Joe DiMaggio plays. So, anyways, Joe DiMaggio picked up, or Nabos didn't. Nabos got killed by Ahav and Yezebel, and Joe DiMaggio is. Joe DiMaggio. Joe DiMaggio merited a hesped from none other than Rav Aaron Rekefet. You can find that on Yitor. Anyways, so there's a what? Rav Aaron Rekefet gave when Joe DiMaggio died, gave a hesped for Joe DiMaggio. I think it's two parts. It's on Yitor. If you're into that kind of thing. Yeah. No, not the funeral. He gave like a shiur, like about Joe DiMaggio. He talked about why baseball is so important, why all these kids, when they were in yeshiva, why they loved baseball so much, and what Joe DiMaggio meant to them. He talked about this issue with the running out to the running out every day, the idea of consistency, the idea of kas. He talked about Al Gianfrido. Do you know who Al Gianfrido was? Apparently, in a World Series game, Joe DiMaggio hit a shot to deep left field, and it was caught by this little Jewish kid from Brooklyn, Al Gianfrido, and he made the catch. What? It sounds Italian, right? I think he said Jewish. Maybe it was an Italian kid.
He was a player or he was in the stand?
No, he was a player, but like no one had heard of him before. So he talked about Al Gianfrido, ein adam she'ein lo shah. There's no person who doesn't have his hour. Everybody has some point in life where they make an impact. And they also talked about apparently when Joe, he was already at second base when this catch was made. He thought it was a home run. He slammed his foot into the ground. His one moment of anger. But then he grabbed his mitt and went out to center field. Like, that's the. Anyways.
That wasn't the catch that broke his streak, was it?
No, this is a world. This is a World Series game against Brooklyn. Okay, anyways, so what are we learning out from that pasuk? So the point of that pasuk is that we're going to take two corrupt men in order to do this, in order to lie. So the Gemara is getting at is, if you're going to lie in court, you will be recognized as a liar. Right? It's not that, oh, we're going to get two guys to testify and they're going to be doing their duty of the king. Even King Ahav says we need to find corrupt people in order to carry this out for us. Right? That's the point. That even the one who put you up to it is going to recognize you as being one corrupt dude. And that's not, no one wants to be in that situation. So asks Rav Henoch, say, I don't understand something. How are we keeping this guy from testifying falsely? He's not afraid of a famine. He's not afraid that he's going to be stabbed to death or be shot at with arrows. But what is he afraid of? He's afraid that he's going to be called corrupt. Why? Why should that be the one thing? This is a guy who's already ready to lie in court. Right? Why should the fact that he's going to be recognized as corrupt be the one thing that's going to dissuade him? And Rav Hanoch says, that's the way it is, because everybody has a, and should have a nice view of themselves, and they don't want to do something that's going to give them a bad reputation. They're chashiv in their own eyes. They don't want to lose their kavodam ha'atzmi. What does that mean? Kavod, honor, atzmi, themselves, their self-respect. They don't want to lose their self-respect by going through it. And even though we're talking about the lowest of the low, you know, we're not talking about tzaddikim that are in the parsha of those that may lie in court, still, they don't want to lose their self-respect. And he adds in another point, that the idea right before, a person comes to them and they say, don't lie because there's going to be a famine. So what's their answer? Why does that not bother them? Or you don't lie because people that lie are going to be stabbed, they're going to be shot at, they're going to be arrowed. Right? And the guy says, he moves on to the next proof. Why is that not a good enough proof? So the Gemara gave the answers why it's not a good enough proof. So the guy says, I work for a living. I'm not a farmer. I'll be okay. They'll still sell produce at Giant. I'll still be able to get stuff from there. Right? It's my time, and it's not going to make a difference the fact that I'm lying or not. So he points out, think about the amount of emunah that is already going into that. Right? If you lie, you're going to get in trouble. What would I have thought the guy's answer would have been? Well, you're going to tell me I shouldn't lie because there's some pasuk in Mishlei telling me not to lie? What do I care about a pasuk from Mishlei? So it says, no, that's not what the Gemara is saying. The Gemara is saying he's bothered by the pasuk in Mishlei, but yet anyways comes up with a tirutz. He comes up with, but I have so much emunah that Hashem is not going to cause. It's true. That pasuk is right. That a guy who lies gets stabbed. A guy who lies gets sorted. A guy who lies gets killed. Yeah, but if that's the case, I also have enough emunah to say that it must have been my time. Right? So this guy who's ready to lie in court. We're already talking about a pretty high balamuna here that we're discussing.
And he also has muna that his basketball career is going to continue, that he's not going to be punished that way.
Yes, right.
The basketball player, could break his leg on court.
Right. Right. Right, so there he talks about the self-respect. He continues. He quotes the pasuk here. The pasuk actually from the previous parak of Im Kesef Tolves Amias Ani Imcha Lo Tiyeh Lo Kenoshe. That a person who needs to lend money to a poor person in their people, you shouldn't be like a creditor to them. You shouldn't be harsh to them. So the Medrash says, "Es ha'ani imcha, a poor person, ein ba'olam keshes min ha'inius, shehu kash mikol yisrim shebe'olam." That there is nothing worse than being poor. That's the worst thing in the whole world. So Amar Rabu sayinu kol ha'yisrim letzarechad, ba'nius letzarechad. As the Medrash says, that if you would balance out all of the possible punishments on one side and being poor on the other side, so they would balance out. Ratzon chalei de boarei b'yes sata makatrig oyev la kodesh baruch hu. Right, amalo kodesh baruch mat harotza niyuso yisurim. As we have the story that the satan came to argue against Eov, and they asked him, "What do you want? You want to be poor? You want yisurim?" So Eov responded, "Ribon olam mekabel ani alai kol yisurim shav olam v'lo aniyus kishe etzi l'shuk. I'll accept upon myself all of the punishments of the world, and I don't want to be poor. When I go to the shuk, ve'im biyadi pruta liknos ma'ochal, that I don't have anything to eat. And why would that be?" And he actually quotes a pasuk in Mishlei that seems to say the same effect. Why would that be? Because, as he's saying, self-respect is a very important thing that people hold very highly of what they feel. I'm willing to suffer, but I don't want to lose my self-respect. And he says that's not gaiva. And another important point here: it's not gaiva. It's not the self-respect is not the same as arrogance. What is arrogance? So he gives a very good. He says it's good to have self-respect. Eilu says shaychus af l'shemet shel gaiva. And it's not even like gaiva at all. Why? What's gaiva? What is arrogance? Kasher adam mishakir la'atzmo. Arrogance is when a person lies to themselves. Shu adif miyaser chaverav. That he's that he's somehow greater than his friends. And therefore, in order to do that, he exaggerates his good points and he minimizes his bad points. Somebody who is a Baal Gaiva is only recognizing what they do that's good, and the things they don't do that's so good, they minimize. That's what Gaiva is. But here, he doesn't recognize that he's greater than his friends. He's recognizing his greatness. So to the things of his friend, that also is considered gadlus habore. So that is the idea of the greatness of the Creator. So that's really the goal. That's what's coming out of this Gemara. Why is it that that last thing is the pasuk that ultimately convinces a person not to lie is the pasuk that says you better have self-respect and therefore you're not going to because even if you lie, you're always going to be known as a liar. Right, you're going to be known as somebody who's going to be corrupt, even by those people who put you up to it, even by those people who gain from it. So, because of the minimization—that's a word—the minimum, the losing of the self-respect, that's considered the worst thing of all, which is a pretty impressive statement to make. Yeah.
About the wouldn't you normally have to have the second witness? Do you have to be two Adam?
Well, that's the pasuk. The pasuk is the two witnesses together.
Right. Yeah. So by association, normally this second witness is also going to be a new witness, so to speak. They're going to be known as generally, you know,
right,
not trustworthy people.
Uh huh.
So he's not going to fool the Bezdin.
What do you mean? Why is he not? Why is he not going to fool the Beis Din?
Because he's associating, going along with known as corrupt among the people who hire him.
Aha, it's not going to work anyways. Because if he's corrupt to those people, the Beis Din also has. Beis Din also has yellow pages where they can look up corrupt individuals.
Because the people who hired him are also known as no good. I mean, you know, it's not going to be decent people who are going to bring him to court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, he has another essay here, a couple of psukim later, on the idea of Midvar Sheker Tirchak. So when we went through this the first time, we mentioned the question of, is that a chumar or is that a kula? Right? Is that a stringency or is that a leniency? Bruce had what he had to say, other Rishonim have what they have to say. Is that considered does that mean be very far from it? Mean don't steal, don't kill, don't kidnap, and be very far away from lying, because that's the worst of the worst. That's one perspective. Or the other perspective is that it's not necessarily love. It's not necessarily a prohibition on the same level as other things, because there are many heterim, there are many kulas in terms of lying. Where does lying ultimately fall short of? What beats out a lie other than death and things like that? What? You said
shalom.
Shalom bayis befrat. That's a detail, but shalom. The pasuk tells us ms v'shalom ehavu MS, truthfulness and peace does Hashem love, and we understand it to mean truthfulness is very important, but Hashem loves peace more than truthfulness. Hashem is willing to allow the truth to be obscured a little bit in order to provide for there to be some peace in the world. And we have the classic example of that is Kitzad, the Gemara in Ksuvus, where it says Kitzad Meraklim Lifnei HaKala, that how do we dance in front of the Kala? What do we say? We say Kala Nav V'Chasud. Meshamai says you tell the Kala how she is. And the Chassan says to the guy, so, Nu, what do you think of her? And he says, well, to tell you the truth, I have to tell you the truth. That's what you asked for. So, since you asked, she could use a little bit of help in this area and that area, and right? So that's what Beis Shammai says to do. And Basil goes after Beis Shammai and says, if a guy has a new purchase, you're going to tell him, guy buys a new car. So a guy's going to go over and says, oh, you got it in green, you should have got it in blue. And, right? So you're not going to do that. It's, you just let it be. So through here, you just let it be. The guy asks you what you think of her, so you say, Kala Nav V'Chasud. She's very nice. And there's a little bit of a question as to what that means, what that response is. Is that response that you're saying, well, she's very nice because, well, everybody is nice. I mean, you can find something nice to say about everybody. I was yesterday at a family gathering, and somebody was, as these gatherings sometimes go in the year 2017, there was a little bit of a Trump versus anti-Trump discussion, and And, you know, it was two people saying pro-Trump, and one guy was anti-Trump. And one of them said to the other one, the one Trump person A said to Trump person B, what do you do about this guy? So which my father responded, the one thing I could say about him is that his brother is much worse. Right? So you can always say the brother is much worse. You can always find nice things to say about, you can always find something nice to say. Either you, so it's a question. Either you, it refers to, you can either make a point that there is something nice about this person that I'm highlighting, or he thinks he's nice, right? The chassan obviously thinks the kala is nice. So, all right, we'll say the person's nice, but the chassan believes that, and it's subjective anyways, and it's all okay. But there is an overriding question here of, okay, is the issue that we're just permitted to lie and to say, okay, or is there a midos issue going on? I mean, why do you have to minimize it? Why does the Gemara come up with, or the Rishonim come up with these things of, well, you know, she's nice, and there's something nice to say about her. She has midos that are nice. You have to kind of have in mind a way that it's the truth. It's a white lie as opposed to a not. Why do we say okay?
That's
just lie.
Subjective, as you said.
Yeah. So
objective,
right. But why is it that we kind of tie ourselves into not saying, well, you know, if you stroke your thumbs around enough times, we'll come with a nice way. Just lie and say, yeah, she's got beautiful hair. You know, and it might not be true at all, but whatever. Why do we try to do that? So there is a long strand of Rishonim, A, that are on the side of Midvar Sheker Tirchak is actually a Chumrah, not a Kula, as Bruce wanted to learn. And beyond that is the idea that the prohibition of Sheker, and perhaps this explains why it's this unique language of not a prohibition, but just is that it's the whole thing is based on Midos. To develop a truthful personality. That's really the goal of the prohibition. Not just whether technically it's every word you're saying, yes, true or not true, etc. But to be a man of truth, that is ultimately the goal that one is attempting to reach. So he makes reference here, actually. Actually, before we get to that, there is a Gemara in Maseches Shabbos, which he points to. And that is the following. The Gemara in Maseches Shabbos, Daf Pei Tes, where it discusses the Matan Torah, things like that. So the Gemara tells the following story. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Bishar Sheyar, Moshe Meluthnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Basatan Vamar Lefanov. So Moshe, he has the Torah. So Moshe was given the Torah, now he walks down, and everything seems to be good. Comes in the Satan rushing, Basatan Vamar Lefanov. The Satan comes in and says, Rabbonu Sheolam, Hashem, right? Torah Hechani, where is the Torah? To which God says, what do you care? You're the Satan. No. Amar lo, so God says, Nasati la'aretz. I gave it to the earth. And then there's a story here. He went to the earth, and he goes to the sea, and he goes, whatever. But ultimately, he comes back to Hashem and says, where is that? I searched the entire earth. I couldn't find the Torah. So Amar lo, Hashem says to him, Leich Eitzel ben Amram. Go to Ben Amram. Ben Amram is the one who has the Torah. Who's Ben Amram? Moshe. Right? So go to Moshe. Why he calls him Ben Amram is a question, but fine. So Halach Eitzel Moshe. So he goes to Moshe. Amar lo, Torah shenasan lo kodesh baruch hu, heichan hi. So he says to Moshe, the Torah that Hashem gave you, where is it? So Amar lo, Moshe says, V'chi ma'anish nasan li'akadosh baruch hu Torah. Who am I that Hashem would give me the Torah? Right? Hashem give it to me? Who am I? I'm a baser v'dam. So Amar lo, Akadosh baruch hu l'Moshe. So, alright, now Moshe gets called into the principal's office. So Hashem says to Moshe, Moshe b'day ata, are you lying? Or you're lying. I mean, it's a question mark or an exclamation point, but you're lying. You're a liar, Moshe. I did give you the Torah. What are you talking about? So Amar lefanav, Rabbonu shel olam. So Moshe says, Chamuda genuza yesh lecha she'ata mishtasheya ba b'chol yom. So you have this coveted treasure that you delight in every day. Ani achazik tova la'atzmi. Should I flatter myself that you gave it to me? So Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as Hashem says to Moshe, Hol mi atata atzmacha, because you diminished yourself, tikare al shemecha. It's going to be called your name, and that's what we say, Zikru Toras Moshe Avdi. Remember the Torah of Moshe. That's why it's known as Toras Moshe. Because Moshe minimized himself over the course of this story. So what's going on here? Hashem tells Moshe, you're a liar, and Moshe says, gives some kind of answer, and Hashem says, oh, you're right, now everyone's going to call it Toras Moshe. What's going on here?
What kind of answer is it?
Right. What's going on? So the way Rav Henoch explains it is that Hashem was coming to Moshe and saying, you're a liar. So what's Moshe's answer? Moshe's answer is, no, this is what I meant. So Hashem didn't realize what Moshe meant. Hashem needs to find a parish to figure out what Moshe is referring to. So what Rav Henoch explains is, Hashem goes to Moshe and says, you're lying. Right? Moshe says, no, I'm not lying. It's 100% true. This is totally what I meant. So Hashem says, because you're explaining the way that you meant in that particular way, because you're saying, oh, when I said this, I really had in mind something that I felt to be 100% truthful. So Hashem says, so therefore you're 100% truthful. Therefore I understand that, but it's not what I understand pshat is. I mean, Hashem would have, if Moshe says, Moshe said, the Torah can't be by me. So Hashem knows a pshat in Moshe. Hashem knows, oh, well, maybe what he means is this, and this, and that thing. But that's not relevant right now. What's relevant is, what did Moshe say? What did Moshe mean? What did Moshe have in mind? Is Moshe being 100% truthful? And Moshe explains himself and says, I was 100% truthful. I can't possibly contain the Torah. The only way I can contain the Torah is if I have a chilak elukim within me. If I have a portion of Hashem within me, that's the only thing that can possibly contain the Torah. In which case, I don't really have the Torah. It's really you that have the Torah, because it's only your chilak within me that's contained the Torah. That's his pshat. But the fact that Moshe explained it, only when Moshe explained it, that's when Hashem could recognize Moshe as being 100% truthful, and therefore name the Torah out of him. There is one, I think we might have done this yesterday when we learned Parshas Vayeshev, not Vayeshev, excuse me, Parshas Vayetze. And that is when we want to describe the MS of Yaakov, the truthfulness of Yaakov. So the Gemara has the following line. I'm sorry, not Parshas Vayetze, Parshas Toldos. There's a tough sign Yud Beis. Right, so Parshas Chof Sayin Yud Beis, it says...
Yaakov has a whole history of... shady deal, so to speak.
Yes, right. Well, on one hand, Yaakov is known as MS Yaakov, but yet he has a whole history of shady deals. In fact, when it refers to him specifically in that way, the Gemara says, "L'raga al-shono, don't change your language, don't lie." That's referring to Yaakov. Yaakov is the epitome of not lying. Why? Where is Yaakov lying? Where he says, "Ulai musheni avi ve'yisa be'inav kamisataya." When Yaakov says, maybe. Yitzchak will feel me and he'll realize that I'm not really Yaakov. How is that an example of Yaakov lying? Of Yaakov always telling the truth? Where do we see Yaakov's truthfulness from? Because when he was about to lie, he was concerned that his father was going to touch him, he's going to realize that he's not really Yaakov, and he might be found out. How does that demonstrate Yaakov's truthfulness? So, Rav Henoch explains, I think we quoted from Rav Schwab when we went through this the first time, is that there's a difference between the word ulai and the difference between the word pen. Right, both of them mean lest, or I'm very concerned about. Pen is lest, I'm very nervous about, and ulai is if, or maybe. So ulai is when I hope it's going to happen, and pen is when I hope it doesn't happen. So when Yaakov is about to go in front of Yitzchak, and he's nervous about being found out, of being right, what does he say? Ulai. Maybe. If only my father will feel me and find out who I really am. Because he really doesn't want to lie. So yes, it's true. Halachically, we have many. There are many times I could give. I wrote an article once upon a time entitled "Ketzan Meshaker and Lifnei Hakala." Right. Well, how do we lie in front of a kala? Right, based on that gemara that we were referenced to before. Yeah, there are times when we are halachically, perhaps not obligated, but certainly mandated to lie. Right? But what is our attitude when we do so? Is our attitude of, oh, pen, lest I be found out, I hope I really don't find out, don't be found out, or is it Yaakov's attitude of, not necessarily saying if only I'm find out, he doesn't necessarily want to be found out by Yitzchak, but I really don't want to be in this situation for much longer when I have to be in this situation. I want to be able to demonstrate the truth. And that's the... He was like his mother, yeah. But that's the example of how you see Yaakov's, even at the times when Yaakov was lying, it was with the recognition of the truth. Similar to the idea of Moshe. Moshe wasn't, maybe said something that wasn't, in the eyes of the Satan, not completely truthful, but in Moshe's mind, it was completely truthful. And that's the Madrega that we're hopefully attempting to reach.
Except yeah. That there's a superficial truth and then there's deeper truth.
Yeah.
Like
Right. Right. So of course it's a little dangerous. You know, when I ask, if I ask my son in the morning, so did you daven yet this morning? Yes. Like, you know, I daven that. My father doesn't ask me that if I daven this morning. is that necessarily, you know, you don't necessarily want to, everybody trying to say, well, I was just telling you the deeper truth, not the obvious truth. Right? You really have to be nervous and careful about how to use that. All right. Stop here.